Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University, this is the January 4 edition of Commodity Week. Well, next Thursday at midday, USDA will release the final 2012 production numbers for the year and the first quarterly grain stocks report for the marketing year, along with the WASI numbers. We'll discuss these and many more numbers in Commodity Week today.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of TGM from Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Have you signed up yet for our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event? We'll share a little Illinois wine, eat some great Grand Championship pork, hear stories from Paul Cooley, do a little Ag Outlook with Wayne Nelson, Jackie Bakes, and Steve Freed, along with Gary Schnicki, and best of all, dine with Orion Samuelson. Your $100 ticket buys the meal, the show, and a signed copy of the Big O's new book. Even better, the funds raised will support the College of Aces Agricultural Communications and Hospitality Management Programs. Those are two of my favorites. It's January the 25th. You can sign up today online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Let's open our discussion with this question. Matt Bennett, next week the reports will all be released at midday for the very first time, on 11 o'clock, I believe, Central Time release. Will that be the most interesting thing about the numbers that are returned from USDA?
Well, I don't think that's going to be the most interesting thing. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with harvested acreage on corn, and kind of like to see what total, you know, final production on both is, as well as quarterly stocks, because there's a lot of moving numbers right now, and it'll be pretty interesting to see where we come out. I have the tendency to believe that we're going to have to address, you know, harvested acres down 1.5 to 2 million. I know not everyone agrees with me, but I'm going to stick by that and see what happens this week.
Kurt?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. The time change, might not go in as early or might not want to stay up all night. I don't know if they have overnight peace or not, but like Matt said, there are a lot of moving targets here. The well-anticipated, I think, harvest acres would be down, but yield might go up a little. You subtract a little demand. Ideas are that we could lose maybe 30 to 40 million bushels on the ending stocks on corn. Bean-wise, maybe a little higher production, a little less crush. Residuals, the big number they're debating about, maybe a little bit more carryout. We'll see how the numbers fall. I don't really anticipate a big surprise per se. I think it's a little bit fine-tuning. The thing to watch probably is the quarterly grain stocks number. That's going to give us maybe the best indication where we are after harvest here on demand and usage.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, the surprise would be that we wouldn't have any volatility. Well, anytime you get into January final crop reports that, you know, mix in the grain stocks report, you're going to see some pretty good changes as a rule, and that's going to generate some volatility during that 15-minute window time everybody kind of gets to digest it. It's going to be hard, I think, for traders to prepare for every angle that USDA tweaks in that report, but There's going to be some surprises, and my guess is there's going to be some volatility, and but it will put the final nail in the coffin of the the 12 crop year or the 12 crop, and everybody will quickly begin to focus on the 13 crop.
Well, speaking of 13, we finished up the 12 calendar year. Here, the way the numbers settled on the yearly basis for the lead option. So for wheat futures, $1.26 and a quarter higher this year than they were on the 31st day of December of 2011. Corn futures finished just 51¾ cents higher last year or than they did last year, and the soybeans were up $2.20¼. Those numbers mean very much on the charts to you, Dan, at all?
Well, I guess the thing that what I look at the chart, I mean, it's nice to see those type of closes. You say corn was basically unchanged and beans were up a couple dollars. Is that what it was?
Corn was up 51 cents, beans were up
51 cents. I don't know what that really means for 13, but I guess it tells you that some of these funds still have some profits maybe in their positions. I don't think too many have profits too much anyway, given how the market has performed over the past 30 days. But I think the biggest concern that we see in commodities is there seems to be a consensus developing that there's a question of how bullish you can be from these levels when you look at the visuals. Now, granted, the visuals are still a guess, but if one would have favorable weather and things go pretty good in Brazil over the next 4 weeks, we're going to have a large supply coming at us. And I think you're starting to see people feeling that this 4 to 5 year run in commodity prices may be over, and we may now be in the process of a year or two type corrective moves.
Let's take up Brazil in more detail. January soybeans this week at a high of $14.44¼. They're low at $13.78. The settlement price was down 35 cents at $13.89. The November contract at $12.77 finished 33¼ lower. Dan's talking about a couple of years in the marketplace that could be turning lower. But on the flip side of that, if you look at the RFS rules, soybean oil will have to be, and all kinds of fats and tallows for that matter, will have to be used in really large numbers of pounds, consumed more actually than I think we can produce by 2014, and up 28% this year, Matt.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, whenever you start talking about this and you look at South America, there's so much more production down there that you have to keep in mind that, as Dan said, if the weather is good, you know, you're looking at a lot of beans coming online. It's no coincidence that as the weather has kind of leveled out, and, you know, Brazil's been okay all along for the most part. Most parts of it have, but Argentina's had some issues here and there. But as the weather has gotten a little bit better, so to speak, on the whole South American area, you know, China's been canceling beans like it's going out of style, and I don't think that's any coincidence. And so, you know, I think whenever I look at this, am I going to get overly bullish or overly bearish? I just have to put my farmer hat on and just say, where can I be profitable? And I think that there's still a lot of profitability in there in both the beans and the corn. And so I'm not going to panic just yet. And part of the reason I'm not going to is we've got some sales on already. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how we move forward.
I baited him just a little bit, but he wouldn't take it for an upside to the soybean market. What do you think, Kurt?
Well, there's some potential there. You know, just like we saw, ethanol helps support corn, but I think this bio, and it's a little bit longer term. But Matt sort of answered, you know, the main question here is just, you know, upside potential. You know, we were all worried about fiscal cliff. We just saw a commodity cliff just hit us here, and reality's kind of setting in through here. You know, we're going to have pretty good production here in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, we're looking at record tight supplies going into March, April, but after that, the supply-demand balance sheet in the world scale loosens up quite a bit.
Dan, the cancellations on the Chinese imports of U.S. soybeans, are they truly cancellations, or is there something underneath those beyond what we're seeing on the front page?
Well, you can probably read it a couple ways. I mean, I kind of read it as just kind of cleaning up the book for the year, and I think that's what we saw here going into the calendar year is that, you know, China contracted with a grain company to maybe buy 1 million tons or 2 million tons or whatever it is several months ago, and they never got to their full contract, so they just went ahead and canceled out that remaining part of it to start all over with a new contract. And you saw today China picked up 300,000 of the 400-some thousand beans that were actually sold. So I think what we saw here is some rolling from one calendar year to the next calendar year. Now, that's the way I would view a lot of this. I don't think it was flat cancellations. But, yes, I mean, they were reported by the USDA, but I think they were contracts that were really never completed, and they just went ahead and cleaned up the paperwork at the end of the calendar year and starting all over again. And I think those cancellations that we saw in, from China will come back into this calendar year, but the market doesn't seem to want to read it that way at the moment anyway.
Will they come back into New Orleans, or will they come back into the Pacific Northwest?
It depends upon who they canceled with. I don't know. They canceled with an export company, and who that export company was and how they were going to be delivered, whether they were going to go over in containers or whether they're going to go over in ships. Who knows? But I think that's what the cancellations were. Were principally that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not thinking that they might be able to buy stuff a little cheaper, but most of that stuff is all basis-type contracts anyway, and it's to be priced by the futures later anyway. So I think it was just mostly cleaning up the books for the calendar year.
Let's turn to the corn market. Curt March corn this week, a 707 and a quarter top, bottom at 679 and a half. It settled at 680 and a quarter in the March, down 13 and three quarters. December corn at $5.71 and three quarters, 28 cents lower. We should probably take up the Mississippi River, which looks like it's going to close again mid-month this month in January, although we've heard plenty of trains are headed south to New Orleans.
Yeah, they're going to find or make it attractive to find alternative options to move. But you got to remember, our corn exports are almost zero. We sold 1.9 million bushels of corn this last week, and that's not real encouraging. But the function of the market is to get the grain there. If it does need to get there, it'll come out of from Cairo and south, what little corn's left. It's probably good to be in the transportation business if they're needing to get it to the Gulf.
And when you look at the ratio of soybean to corn now, does it make you as a farmer, as a marketer, feel better about the number of acres that may or may not be planted by producers in the coming year on the idea that the ratio is more in line and maybe the number of acres might be more in line for a normal growing season as well?
Well, when you look at it, you know, as of today, it was around 2.2 to 1, and we were, you know, 2.0 to 1 just December 1st. And so, you know, that's definitely changed a fair amount. And I don't know that that lends credence to pushing every single acre towards corn, especially considering what production costs are. And production costs since really the beginning of the fall, whenever fertilizer companies started coming out with prices, have done nothing but steadily increase. And so be really interesting to see what costs do moving forward, because there's going to always be swing acres. And so as a producer, I got to sit here and look, you know, what's my profitability going to be? And whenever you start getting beans to that ratio level that's, you know, 2.2 or better, you know, a lot of guys are going to start thinking about it a fair amount, especially, you know, bean yields were awfully good here in the past year, and guys have been getting burned with corn on corn several years in a row now. And so it lends credence to guys are going to say, you know, maybe the easiest thing for me to do is either A, stick with a rotation, or B, you know, just go ahead and plant bean acres even whenever, you know, they've been planting corn on corn for several years in a row.
New crop corn was down 28 cents on the week, a $5.71 and three quarter settlement price. Depending on your basis, is it a good enough space that you still want to market corn?
Yeah, as far as the new crop goes.
As far as new crop goes,
you know, whenever you look at a guy's production costs, it still is profitable in most scenarios. Now, the thing we have to consider is, you know, granted, we've been going down for quite some time. I've got guys come in every day. When's it going to rebound? Are we going to get back to $6? And bottom line is, you know, nobody knows what the market's going to do. And while it's still profitable, I still would like to see guys making some sales, because the potential is that the market could erode rapidly.
Yeah, as we move lower here, guys are going to start panicking more. There's ideas we could go back to where we started from before the drought kicked in back in May. They'd be about down in the 512 area if that would happen. The simplest thing to do would be a paper strategy, so you're not actually committing to bushels for, say, at the elevator. If you create a paper position, you've got the flexibility to come out of that and sort of manage that position.
And Dan, how do you feel about new crop corn sales?
Well, the chart tells you we're going lower first. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't come back higher later. I think it's real hard for a farmer to sell corn at these levels because they've had their sights set on maybe 6.25 type cash corn, 6.50 type futures, and now we're only 20 cents away from 5.50 futures. So I think for the most part, I think farmers probably won't do any selling. And I would at least wait through this report to see if we could get some kind of spring rally going as we go into the spring months before I'd panic. But I do not like the market the way it is acting. It is acting counter-seasonal, and those are pretty mean moves.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises. Alongside him in studio is Kurt Kimmel with Fates Commodities and Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Back in 2 minutes, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Since my last report a few weeks ago, some changes have occurred. Recall that excessively wet conditions have dominated for months across major production areas of Argentina. That has significantly slowed planting progress. The weather pattern is just now beginning to change. Drier weather has arrived in southwestern production areas of Argentina. Those areas, including much of Cordoba and La Pampa, will remain mostly dry over the coming week. Along with that will come higher heat, with daytime temperatures rising into the mid-90s to low 100s. The dryness will allow for field work, but the heat will not be helpful for crops in the vegetative to reproductive stages. Meanwhile, the ground is still too wet farther to the north and east in Argentina. More rain is expected there this week and into early next week. It does appear that needed dry weather will finally arrive by later next week, but along with the risk for unhelpful heat. The region with the best growing conditions in South America of late is South Brazil and Paraguay. Soil moisture is adequate to slightly too wet. Mostly dry weather is expected across this region over the weekend, with thunderstorms likely to follow early next week. Winds blowing off the Atlantic Ocean will keep temperatures seasonably cool over the coming week, which is favorable for crops. Farther north, across center west and southeast Brazil and Bahia, only a few scattered thunderstorms are likely through the middle of next week. Rainfall deficits for the past month are generally 5 to 8 inches, so crops need increased rainfall. There are some signs that rainfall will pick up in these northern production areas of Brazil later next week, but confidence on that materializing is still a bit low. That is your South American weather update. For Commodity Week, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the January 4 edition of Commodity Week from the Land Grant, Urbana-Champaign, University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Chicago at the Lynn Group is Roy Huckabee this afternoon to take up what's been happening in the commodity markets. Thanks so much, Roy, for taking the time with us. What are you looking forward to most in next Friday's USDA reports?
The part of the report report that always gets the biggest reaction is the DS1 stocks. It embeds the production, it embeds the usage through the first quarter of the year, and it has a history. If you don't hold me to these numbers because they're put together by staff, not me, but 6 out of the last 9 years, the USDA has given you a corn stocks number that averages about 250 million bushels less than the average guess. And in 5 of those 6 years, corn traded at limit up on the opening. So that is the history behind this report, and the volatility will certainly still be there. I'm not surprised at a small increase in bean production. The Informa corn production number today floored me. They took corn yields up a bushel, didn't adjust acres, and I happen to agree with was it Matt talking about losing 1.5 million to 2 million acres of corn?
Yes.
I think that the forage demand to replace $300 hay in the June, July, August slot was just too great. And we saw a lot of acres that turned into silage rather than get harvested as corn.
Well, Roy, what do you think the domestic ending stocks numbers for corn and beans could end up then after they juggle all these numbers around?
Well, I'm using an 8.1 corn stocks number, 8.1 billion, and that's with a production that's 250 million less than the USDA. My bean number, and I'm about 30 million bigger than their number on bean production, comes in just a little over 2 billion bushels.
Yeah, Roy, if you know, we're talking a little bit about 13, you know, in the ratio, and whenever you look at you know, potential acres on corn, bean, where they're at, you know, what do you tell a producer right now who's obviously somewhat in panic mode after seeing so much you know, this DS13 get away from him here in the last few weeks? You know, what kind of strategy are you looking at, or what do you do to, you know, are you looking forward thinking it's going to rally back up to a decent degree, or what's your opinion?
Well, I'm going to beg off just a little bit because it's going to sound kind of like patting yourself on the back. But in a meeting in Champaign 3 weeks ago, I told the crowd there that they had to have 40% of their new crop corn and new crop beans sold. The reasoning is because we don't live in a vacuum, and the rest of the world likes these prices, and you're going to see major expansion everywhere that they can. And the two that jump out at, well, actually three that jump out at you is India, the Black Sea, and Brazil. I had a customer in Brazil 3 weeks ago that told me that, he says, you can't believe what they've done down here. And if you live in Champaign County, you see this all the time. But he says, they've plowed right up to the road. They've planted right up to the road. He says, that's added 5, 6, 7% to our acres down here, and nobody's going to catch that. Nobody's going to pick up on it. And again, I know that in Champaign, especially on the south side of town, you drive down those country roads, you got corn growing right up to the edge of the road where you feel like you're in about an 8-foot tunnel, right?
Sometimes. Dan?
I guess I'd like to ask Roy where he actually thinks the feed usage number is for corn for this current year. I know USDA's got it way low, or at least looks way low to me. And I guess I'd like to have his thoughts on exactly what number he thinks it is.
If I go into detail, I've got to step back a notch because I'm importing more corn than the USDA is.
Okay, what
the Wilmington group is buying, or they have bought, a cargo of corn every week. They're going to import somewhere between 100 and 110 million bushels of corn. So that corn consumption is there, but it adds to your supply as well. USDA is probably understated on corn imports by 50 million.
Okay, they're at 100 right now, so you think
I'm at 150.
They're at 150?
I'm at 150.
Okay, and they're at 100. Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. There's also, you have to go into wheat feeding, and my wheat feeding number is also much larger than theirs. They're at 130 imports, and I'm at 150. and they're at feed residual of 315, and I'm at 400. Now that I've given you those numbers, in my S&Ds, I'm using feed residual numbers in corn of 4175 up compared to the USDA at 4150. So I'm slightly larger, but I'm not too carried away. But when you look at putting together the corn feeding and the wheat feeding, you'll see that I get to be where I'm about 100 bigger than the USDA on the total numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, Roy, would the thing to be as a trade be long old crop, short new crop then?
Well, I see a lot of people that are lining up that way. I got to back up a little bit because I told you that I told the guys to sell corn, right?
Yes.
After Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, I came out of all short positions, corn and beans, and new crop. I felt like the market had moved so rapidly and that there would be a chance to put those positions back out. I was worried about the Jan 11 crop report. And, that's old news. The corn market's come down another 15 cents. The bean market's come down another 50 cents. So I'm good and bad at the same time. I think that this report is so important that to predict what the market's going to do coming out of it is very difficult. But as bad as we've broken in the last 3 weeks, and you were talking about numbers, since the 1st of December, corn's down 73 cents. Wheat has broken $1.25. A bean since D's 15 has broken $1.35. So those things have given you a real shock. The problem has been liquidation, and we talked a little bit about rebalancing. I think that a lot of people pre-positioned the rebalancing, and if you look at how severe the meal break has been in the last 10 days, anybody that bought meal thinking that they had a lot of index fund buying coming at them on starting on Monday, they just got blown out. They lost $20 a contract. So I think there's a lot of reasons for this break, but there's been a increase in open interest all the way down. So it's not been long liquidation. It's been people that are trading.
One final question, and this comes back to your comments about Brazil, the Black Sea area, India. They'll produce corn. Can they be competitive with the United States in the production of corn and keep the export market that we did have at bay?
I think that the Black Sea area, I'd have to say yes. When I look at Brazil, corn yields are still substandard compared to the U.S., but if you look at what they're doing with their introduction to GMO varieties and farming practices, they're finding some corn that does well in that northern part of Brazil rainforest atmosphere. You have to remember that last year, the double crop corn that was planted in February, that part of their crop was bigger than their first time corn. And the same thing is going to happen this year if the beans come off in time to get that crop planted. At least the acres will be bigger.
Roy, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Roy Huckabee is with the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Now a final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I'd like guys just to keep in mind where their profitability levels are. And, whenever we go through this report, be prepared to do something with it if the opportunity arises.
Kurt Kimmel?
This brand new year, there is some downside risk after all. And I'd like to echo Matt's idea there to, you know, have a little bit of a game plan. Don't completely rely on crop insurance.
And Dan Zwicker.
I want to wish everybody a happy new year, and hopefully that the market will give us some pricing opportunities between now and planting. It does look like 13 shaping up to be a little more negative than what we've grown accustomed to, but we got a long ways to go before we plant the crop, let alone harvest one. So I just want to wish everybody a new year.
Thank you so much to Dan Zwicker and Kurt Kimmel, along with Matt Bennett and Roy Huckabee. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.